spent a little bit of time before we went on air in search of the perfect song to open today's episode with, and by golly, by gum, I think we got it. Let's roll it. Just a clip of it.
There were some scientists trying to figure out the Sasquatch riddle. Then they figured out it was a missing link.
Is that the D?
It is the D.
Oh, man, I love the D. I miss the D. They're back, though.
Mm-hmm. That's what could be more appropriate than the Tenacious D song about Bigfoot, about the Sasquatch. Hello, I'm Ben.
I am Noel.
And Noel, you found that perfect song as we were looking through the internets to find a cool, fun song.
Well, it had to be the one, Ben, because there is really no finer song of the mystery of the Bigfoot, the Sasquatch, than In Search of Sasquatch by Tenacious D. That was also the TV show version. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was actually on the record. Doesn't matter.
But the only way that song could be topped is if Tenacious D, when they return, if they put out a reprised version or they have the discovery of the Sasquatch. We want to, of course, bid a distant hello to our super producer, Casey Pegram, and a very close hello to our guest super producer, Paul Deckant.
Yeah, he's seated right outside the shipping container. We're looking at him right now.
And our story today begins in the far west, Northern California specifically. It also incorporates not just Tenacious D, but another pop culture phenomenon, Star Wars.
Where do you come down on the Star Wars, Ben?
I'm a fan.
You fur it or again it?
I'm fur it. Yeah. I'm a fan. I'm not one of those people who feels that you must choose between either Star Trek or Star Wars. I think they both have their merits, and they're both fun to watch.
They're totally different. What, because they're in space and they have star in the name? Mm-hmm. We have to make a choice? We have to choose allegiances? That's ridiculous.
It feels a little bit falsely dichotomous to me.
Are you Rebel or Empire?
You know, it's tough to make that call because having watched the films, the rebels are always the protagonist.
Right.
So,
and Empire, they're basically a bunch of fascists.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and very much into uniforms and conformity. So I guess I would say Rebel, but really if I were existing in the Star Wars universe, all I would want to do is use the Force, get my midichlorians up, you know? What about you?
Obviously, Rebel. It seems like a very unpopular decision to be Empire. But people do choose that allegiance in the fan community. Many of you may know our compatriot Holly Fry from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Also, by the way, plug, host of a cool show I'm working on with her called Drawn, The Story of Animation, which is a partnership with Cartoon Network. And it's a really fun kind of love letter to all things animation. Anyway, Holly, the biggest Star Wars fan you could ever imagine. I'm serious. Use your imagination. Think of the biggest Star Wars fan. Take it up a couple clicks from there. You got Holly Fry. She has a rebel tattoo. She makes all her own clothes. Pretty much all of it is Star Wars themed. And when she overheard Ben, you and I, talking about the connection between Sasquatch and a certain Wookiee, her eyes lit right up.
It's true. There is a connection. Now, fans of Star Wars, you will recall Chewbacca, of course.
He
is that it? We're in the throat, really. I bet you can do it.
That was close. Let's play a clip.
I think it's better.
As I was saying, Chewbacca is a Wookiee, a tall, hairy biped, and also intelligent, a sentient being. He is best known as the friend, first mate, cosmic road trip buddy of Han Solo, and he is the co-pilot on the famous spaceship, the Millennium Falcon. He's also super duper tall.
Very tall.
Like 7 foot plus.
Yeah, and you know, it took a super duper tall human to fill that super duper tall costume. A British man by the name of Peter Mayhew.
Yes, Peter Mayhew, who might be unfamiliar to people who are casual Star Wars fans. I wouldn't say that either of us or super producer Paul are people who can quote exact moments and know all the canon. I wouldn't say we're super fans, but we're fans, right? You like Star Wars.
I've seen all the movies. I've seen all of them.
Yeah, and I'll probably watch them again. And I'll say it, in real life, I'm a very nice, compassionate person with a lot of empathy. But I think the Sith are cool.
Wow.
Don't you?
Okay.
Dude, the Sith are cool. Darth Vader is like the most memorable part of the first few movies.
It's true. Also played by a very tall man. And it's actually quite appropriate for today's episode, how Mayhew found himself in this role in London back around the time that Star Wars was going into pre-production. He was part of a profile that a London reporter did on people with big feet.
which is insane when you think about it and funny. Originally, he wasn't supposed to be Chewbacca. Originally, I believe George Lucas was hoping to get a bodybuilder named David Prowse to play the role, but Prowse chose to play Darth Vader. And we should say Peter Mayhew, despite having a peak height of 7 feet, 3 inches, or 221 centimeters, he does not suffer from gigantism. You know, like Wadlow had.
He's just a big fella.
Mm-hmm. He does, however, have a condition called Marfan syndrome, which is a genetic disorder of connective tissue, and often that can lead to people having extraordinary heights.
Yeah, and often very skinny. You know, the band Deer Hunter, the singer, an Atlanta band, fantastic. The singer Bradford Cox has Marfan syndrome, and he's quite tall and lanky. The other guy you're talking about who played Darth Vader, he said he wanted to play Darth Vader because he thought villains were more memorable. And the funny thing is, too, he didn't realize his voice wasn't going to be used, that it was going to be James Earl Jones. They did a little bait and switch on him. And Mayhew, also, not his voice. The voice of Chewbacca, that sound we heard a minute ago, is comprised of, like, a bear, a walrus, and several other animals combined to make that super cool sound. But today's story didn't take place until the third. I don't know how you count them. You're supposed to. It's like episode.
In order of, let's do it in order of release.
Let's do it that way, just to keep it easy. The third Star Wars movie released, that was The Return of the Jedi, which was the first Star Wars movie to feature, if I'm not mistaken, and Star Wars fans, please, just come at me.
Be kind.
No, don't be kind.
Be kind.
Give it to me.
Be kind.
Hit me with your lightsabers. Was the first one to feature the little guys, the little furry bear guys.
Ewoks.
And they occupied they were forest dwellers.
The Forest of Endor, yes. Return of the Jedi, 1983. In the film, you'll remember, of course, that Chewbacca is one of the characters who visits Endor.
Mm-hmm.
And he is... he has a nice rapport with Ewoks, being that they are both furry and lovable despite their size difference. But the story we're examining doesn't take place in front of the cameras while they were rolling. You see, where they were shooting the scenes for the Forest of Endor in State Park. What was that State Park, Noel?
It is the Tall Trees Redwood Grove, located in the Redwood National and State Park in Humboldt County.
Mm-hmm. And when this area has another notable thing about it, aside from being a site of Star Wars filming, it is also known as an alleged hotspot for one of the most famous cryptids in the United States, Bigfoot, a.k.a. the Sasquatch, a.k.a. the Yeti, a.k.a. Swamp Ape. But that they call it Swamp Ape in Florida.
Skunk Ape. That's another one. Yeah.
Abominable Snowman in the Himalayas. And Sasquatch sighting or Sasquatch hunting was popular enough in this region and remains popular enough in this region today that the filmmakers were worried that Chewbacca or Peter might get shot or harassed or attacked because in Bigfoot country, there is a 7+ foot tall creature that is hairy that is wandering around. And they said, well, you know, that's kind of going to mess up filming for us. We don't have him getting shot.
What's that cool word, the $5 word for being hairy?
Hirsute.
Love that.
Yeah.
Sorry. Just love that word.
So they didn't have it in the script for him to be shot by Bigfoot hunters, but they had to make the movie anyway. The show must go on. So what did they do?
Well, According to Mayhew himself, this is something of a sort of a Star Wars fan community urban legend, mm-hmm. which is interesting considering it surrounds a Bigfoot story as mm-hmm. well, that he had kind of a detail, sort of a protection squad, if you will, mm-hmm. that were decked out in brightly colored jackets, like vests, you know, like you'd see neon like crossing guard vests, or even hunters wear these kind of vests so that they can be visible in the forest and, you know, keep from shooting each other.
And be obviously not creatures of the woods.
Unless you're Dick Cheney. That apparently does not read for Dick.
Oh, boy.
Too soon?
No, I don't think that's too soon. That's not too soon. It's not Sasquatch related, but it's a great example of how easily accidents can happen while hunting.
Yeah, especially if, you know, you're mistaken for a potentially dangerous predator or the target of your hunt.
Right, because people genuinely believe that this creature, while elusive, does exist somewhere, right? And they want to, everybody who believes it wants to be the first person to find it.
You're just going to kill it? You think you'd shoot it with a dart or something?
Yeah, that's the thing. Because when we discover new animals or rediscover animals that are previously thought to be extinct, it's a real tragedy to find out that they were still alive when you've killed one, right? Or you've killed the last one of two or three. There's another reason here. I know this sounds like maybe they were being overprotective of Chewbacca, even though it's an understandable thing to have this detail. Something else happened in 1967 in Humboldt County that both fueled the search for this cryptid and, I think, added some credibility to the fear that Chewbacca might be attacked, and that is a film.
Are you talking about the famous Patterson-Gimlin film?
Yep, the famous Patterson-Gimlin film, which was shot in 1967 alongside Bluff Creek. That's about 25 miles northwest of Orleans, California, in Humboldt County. And this film, which is named after the guys who shot it, Roger Patterson and Robert Bob Gimlin, this film is so iconic that if you are a dyed-in-the-wool true believer of Bigfoot or you're an absolute skeptic, either way, no matter how you feel about the allegations of this gigantic creature existing— you have seen this footage. You can go on YouTube and see countless professional documentaries, countless TV shows, and countless amateur documentaries attempting to analyze this little less than 1 minute of footage of this large, hairy-looking thing walking.
Yeah, I mean, you see it from behind, and it looks good. Although at the same time, it's sort of like, you know, when was this?
67.
67. I mean, you know, the Chewbacca costume, it looks a lot like the Chewbacca costume from behind.
That's
a
the
lot
thing.
Like it. A lot like it.
That's the thing. It absolutely does. Because the big differentiation is the big differentiations between the appearance of Chewbacca and the appearance of this creature in this film are only discernible from a closer distance.
Sure. And my question for you, Ben, is like, what's the backstory behind this film? Like, what gives it weight? Like, why are people still kind of thinking that these people had no reason to, like, fake it?
We can look a little bit into the origin of that film itself. So Patterson read an article about Bigfoot in a magazine in 1959, a magazine called True Magazine. And then he visited Bluff Creek in 1962, so several years before they caught this film or made this film.
Right. So he was already kind of in search of Sasquatch.
Yeah.
A little bit, like the Tenacious D song.
Yeah. According to author Marion Place, when Patterson arrived at Bluff Creek, he talked to tons of people who believed in Bigfoot and said, hey, it's out here. Not only is it out here, I can show you some stuff about it. I can show you some evidence. And so in 1964, he returned and he met a guy named Pat Graves who drove him to Laird Meadows. And that's where, according to this story, he saw fresh tracks, fresh Bigfoot tracks. And he thought it would be an amazing scientific breakthrough if he could obtain evidence that these were not hoaxes, but the mark of an unknown human-like creature.
Interesting. For me, it would be a lot more believable if it just happened to be some rando out in the woods with his camera that caught the thing, you know.
Right, like at a
candidly.
Picnic.
Yeah.
And they're filming their kid making a sandwich.
Daddy, what's that?
And then it pans to the left.
I'd buy that much more than this guy who sort of had a result he was after, and a reason to want to be the guy, you know?
Yeah, here's the thing. He was constantly ridiculed for this search, and he was always running short on money. He founded this thing called the Northwest Research Foundation and used that to get funding for these Bigfoot searches, and he conducted several expeditions, but he also had a financial motivation. That's probably the best way to put it. In 1966, he published a paperback about the search, and he added the income from that to the income from his lectures. Ostensibly to fund
okay.
further searches. But that's a tough call to make.
I think so too. But you know what, Ben?
What's
this
that?
Area is just lousy with these kinds of reports in general, mm-hmm. this Humboldt area and the Northern California region in general. Big old state, California. And totally different like ecosystem and environment in Northern California. Whereas in Southern California, everything's a lot more arid and desert-like. Up there, it's much more lush and green and these huge, huge trees, the redwood forests. But I actually found, Ben, a report dating back, the earliest one that I could find, from January 2nd of 1886, mm-hmm. From the Del Norte Record, and a correspondent from that publication wrote this from Happy Camp, Siskiyou County, again on January 2nd, 1886. Mm-hmm. And here's what it says. I do not remember to have seen any reference to the wild man which haunts this part of the country, so I shall allude to him briefly. Not a great while since, Mr. Jack Dover, one of our most trustworthy citizens, while hunting, saw an object standing 150 yards from him, picking berries or tender shoots from the bushes. This thing was of gigantic size, about 7 feet high, with a bulldog head, short ears, and long hair. It was also furnished with a beard and was free from hair on such parts of its body as is common among men. Its voice was shrill or soprano and very human, like that of a woman in great fear. Mr. Dover could not see its footprints as it walks on hard soil. He aimed his gun at the animal, or whatever it is, several times, but because it was so human, he would not shoot. 1886.
And that's just the first published report we could find.
Well, let's go back even further, Ben. Let's talk about the origins of this creature.
The origins.
In lore.
The strange thing about Bigfoot, which is at base a gigantic human-like primate, right? The strange thing about it is that reports of creatures like these date back into the ancient empires and ages of myth and legend. Sometimes you'll see reports of a quote-unquote wild man, right? Mm-hmm. That trope, or that
the wild man of Borneo, for example.
Sure, yeah, or something called the hairy man. Folklore experts like Joseph Campbell see this wild man in the woods legend as as coming from a couple of different places. One of the most interesting, if not the most plausible ideas, is that it's some sort of orally transmitted memory of an encounter with the largest known primate, the extinct Gigantopithecus, which was 10 feet tall, and may have interacted with early Homo sapiens.
Like in the Jungle Book.
Yeah, like in the Jungle Book. Spoiler alert for the newest Jungle Book.
I'm kidding, but the one depicted in that live-action /CGI Jungle Book is like a giant orangutan-looking creature, but it is that extinct Gigantopithecus that would have been native to that part of the country.
Yeah, and
Asia, India.
Yeah, and fun fact with the Gigantopithecus, at least in the Jungle Book, and this is not too much of a spoiler for the show, in the live-action Jungle Book, the Gigantopithecus King Louie is played by Christopher Walken,
yeah,
who is going just full Walken on that. He is nuts.
He is taking a walk again.
For some reason, it's from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And he sings the King Louie song, but in a really weird, like, spoken word scat poet strange way.
Christopher Walken's one of those, like, just beloved actors that can only do Christopher Walken.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, you might disagree, but I kind of feel like it works and it's mm-hmm. great, but he's sort of like a Jeff Goldblum, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, or an Al Pacino.
Right.
Here's a hot take. I want to see what you think of this. This is sort of related because Peter Mayhew's an actor. Anyway, just humor me.
Go with it, bro.
Tell me what you think about this. So one of the great differences between the lauded actors in the States and the lauded actors in Europe is that in the case of European actors, the A-listers, the top-notch actors, are praised for their abilities to be chameleons. Largely praised for their ability to become another person, to slip into a role. Whereas in the States, a lot of top-notch A-list actors are praised for their ability to constantly be unapologetically themselves. And it's weird because it doesn't – I'm not at all saying that one is better than the other, nor am I saying that these people aren't amazing actors.
Right.
It's just a very strange interpretation.
No, it's true. Over here we call those character actors. Mm-hmm. They almost get like a demotion kind of, you know?
Yeah, like you're
not a leading man. You're a character actor.
You're always the cop.
Yeah.
You're always the angry dad who's almost had it, you know?
Oh, I guess when I say character actor, I mean, what I'm saying is they are more chameleonic, but the leading men are less so.
Right. Like Al Pacino in Devil's Advocate and Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman. Yeah. A lot of people would tell you, and I love Devil's Advocate, a lot of people will tell you that they're always the same, they're roughly the same mannerisms or something, you know?
Yeah.
Even though I believe in Scent of a Woman, Al Pacino plays a blind character.
But you know what? Al Pacino, not tall enough to play Bigfoot, my friend.
Not tall enough
to play...
See
what I did there?
Yeah.
We pulled it back in.
Yeah, circled back. Not tall enough to play Bigfoot. Gigantopithecus, though, in a larger sense, no pun intended, but I guess I'll allow it, was close enough to be like our guy for this. If we're trying to find a suspect for a historical Bigfoot, because Gigantopithecus Blackie was thought to be closely related to early hominins, especially Australopithecus. And this was based on molar evidence. So the thing...
Molar, like teeth.
Yeah, like teeth, mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. The thing about trying to figure out whether Gigantopithecus was the origin of the Sasquatch or hairy man myths is that when you look at it, as we established earlier, when you look at depictions of this thing, it doesn't look like a Sasquatch the way they are described from the 19th century on. It looks like a giant orangutan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got the big face flaps that are, I'm going to say, a big enough differentiator. Like its head is bigger.
Yeah.
Than a Sasquatch's head would be.
Yeah, and its neck looks like testicles or something.
It's got like a waddle almost, yeah. It was also probably not super fast.
Oh, I can't imagine. and unlike the depiction in the Jungle Book, it probably didn't smash things and swing on trees.
Nor did it have a strong New York accent.
Yeah, no, it's true. But here's the thing. One beef that... Bigfoot skeptics have is like, where's the evidence? Give me some bones. Give me a body. Show me the body, right?
Show me fecal matter or something. A nesting site. Yeah.
But with Gigantopithecus, you know, there is evidence. You could even find some of these. They were plentiful enough that you could find jawbones and teeth in like curio or apothecary shops in places like Vietnam and India where these creatures were indigenous.
So for traditional medicine, then, one would imagine, right? That would be the use.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is, you know, these things would have been 10 feet tall and weighed more than 1,200 pounds. So totally in line with the type of stature we're talking about for these wild men, these hairy men, these Sasquatches. And the thing is, they're not just limited to, you know, North America or Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
They're all over the world.
Sure. They're in Siberia. They're called the Chuchuna there. The Australians would call it the Yowie, which I think is a fun name.
Absolutely.
You may hear it called the Yeren in China. We mentioned the Yeti earlier. There are different...
The Yeti's the snow one, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, or abominable snowman. Right? There are different cases of alleged physical artifacts being discovered or being held, such as the Pangbuche hand. There was an alleged Yeti scalp that was supposed to be around, but I think was later disproven through testing. And this is a really controversial thing, because for some biologists, the search for cryptids, which is an umbrella term describing any animal that has been alleged to exist but has been not proven to exist or has been officially considered extinct, and then, you know, people think it may be rediscovered, cryptozoologists are considered largely persona non grata in the
fringy,
pseudoscience in the academic world, because other scientists will say that these folks have already decided something exists and they're not practicing critical thinking or scientific method. They're just trying to prove that what they came in believing was correct.
It's a confirmation bias, right?
Exactly.
And like our pal who made the film. I would find that evidence, quote unquote, much more believable if it wasn't somebody who already was looking to find something and then did this.
And until his death, he maintained that he understood why people could think it was weird, but he was not hoaxing anyone, and he wouldn't deny that what he saw was legitimate. But then that also raises the possibility that perhaps he was hoaxed.
Mm.
Which is...
maybe someone was trolling him.
Yeah.
Or Sasquatching him.
Yeah. Oh, maybe we could use that as a new verb, to get Sasquatched.
I like it. Or just squatched. How about that?
Squatched is good.
Yeah.
Squatch out. Yeah.
I'm into it.
Yeah. All right. Well,
let's incorporate it into the ridiculous history lexicon.
Yeah. Let's put it into our burgeoning encyclopedia.
We have Son of a Fish. We have Ship Show. Mm-hmm. And now we have You Just Got Squatched.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we have a few other ones too, but recommend your favorite slang to us. We do want to point out, again, we know how ridiculous this fear may have seemed for Peter Mayhew and for the filmmakers, but even as recently as 2014, 20% of the U.S. population, 1 out of 5 people, believe in Bigfoot or something like it.
Isn't that like as many people as believe in the Big Bang Theory?
Yes. Yeah, not the show, the scientific concept.
I believe in the Big Bang Theory.
I believe
it's so good. Sheldon.
It's got a heart.
Have
you
seen Young Sheldon? Not good.
Is that a spinoff?
Yeah.
What?
Young Sheldon.
I remember seeing the thumbnail for that and thinking, wow, I have drifted far from the mainstream demographic.
He's just such a smarmy little kid. He just thinks thinks he knows it all. You know, it's one of those shows about like the genius kid who gets to go to high school when he's like, you know, 10 or something.
Like a Doogie
and everyone
type.
Hates him. Yeah. He insists on wearing the bow tie. I digress. The kid though that plays him is also in that show Big Little Liars,
mm-hmm,
which
mm-hmm.
is awesome, by the way. That's a great show if you haven't checked that out. But I don't know. You're right, Ben. There was legitimate fear for this quite large, tall man mm-hmm. wearing this hirsute costume.
Yes.
Yeah.
And on another show we've done, if you want to learn more about Bigfoot, you can hear our full interview with the founder and curator of Expedition Bigfoot, a one-of-a-kind museum in up near Ellijay, Georgia.
It's so cool.
David Baraka. Yeah.
It's like something you'd see in Epcot Center
or
like
Universal
in the
Studios,
90s or something.
Yeah.
It's really, really neat. And the guy's a super cool guy and believes this stuff with all his heart.
Mm-hmm. And you can, in the interview, hear us ask him some of the same questions that always come up, the tough ones. The question number one, numero uno, is, you know, where are the bones? Where are the feces? Where are the nesting sites? And how much of a range would a creature this size have to have? How much food would it have to eat to sustain itself, let alone to sustain and feed a juvenile version, right, if it reproduces? At this point, there is no universally accepted proof that something like Bigfoot currently exists, nor is there proof that something like it existed in the recent past. The closest known thing would be maybe misidentification of large extant primates like gorillas or orangutans, or the Gigantopithecus. Maybe, way back in the day, but then again, still very speculative. One thing is for sure, though, if someone who was a Sasquatch hunter was out there in the area that is sometimes called the Bigfoot capital of the world, and they saw Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca, everyone's favorite Wookiee, strolling through the woods by himself, they would probably have freaked out. They definitely would have tried to film him, harass him. I like to think they wouldn't have shot the guy.
You don't think they would have noticed all the camera crews and extras and Ewoks and stuff?
Confirmation bias, though, man.
I guess you're right.
Maybe they would. And we don't want to get too far down the Bigfoot rabbit hole. But it is interesting. I wonder if there are other situations like that where, in the course of making a film, the filmmakers had to take extra precautions or maybe even do extra cultural things mm-hmm. because of the values and mores of the place in which they were filming.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah. Apocalypse Now, there's got to be something with that.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, that was a notoriously guerrilla kind of shoot, you know? And the thing I've noticed too, like here in Atlanta, it's like, they call it Yollywood because they shoot a whole lot of movies here. And people I know that work in the film industry, sometimes they bulldoze a little bit. You know, if they're going to like shoot on your street.
Oh, yeah.
They don't really care about disrupting
your
routine. They'll just post a little bill and so you know it's coming. But it's like, okay, I guess this is my life for the next week or two.
Did you ever get the shakedown? Like if someone's filming on your street and they say no through traffic.
Yeah, no through traffic.
And you have to tell them that you live there.
I live here. I'm walking here. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing, too. This, like I said, this story about Mayhew and the Bigfoot determined detail has kind of found its place in Star Wars fan culture as kind of a bit of an urban legend. But Mayhew mm-hmm. himself was asked this in an AMA on Reddit in 2015, and he did confirm this is true. He said, yes, that is absolutely true. But then some intrepid Star Wars fans did a little digging and kind of got clarification that he was really more warned by production folks not to walk off the set in costume for fear that he might get shot by hunters. And they reminded him, remember, this is Bigfoot country. Mm-hmm. So, you know, memory is a funny thing.
The story's kind of true. It has a seed of truth.
But I know, but this idea of dudes in you know, brightly colored vests there specifically to protect this one actor in this costume.
Little bit of an exaggeration. A little dicey. Yeah. And the thing is that if you would like to become a Sasquatch hunter or search for them, you are absolutely free to do so. I'm going to go ahead and call it, Noel. I don't think anyone's going to find anything, but it's such a cool excuse to get out into some of the most beautiful wilderness in this country.
Absolutely. I mean, the Redwoods are gorgeous. I've actually never gotten I've been to San Francisco, but I've not gotten to go quite that far up north. But I think I will be relatively soon going up to Washington State and Oregon for the first time.
And you haven't been to Oregon before?
No, I've never been to Oregon.
Oh, you're going to love it. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
What part are you going?
Going to Portland.
Okay.
But then also up, like we're taking a road trip. So
awesome.
For a secret project.
Right. Well, we are almost out of time today, but we would be remiss if we didn't mention some other fantastic and fascinating things we learned about Chewbacca.
One of my favorites is actually this comic book that depicts a crash landing that happens with Han Solo and Chewbacca on the Millennium Falcon, and they go through some kind of like wormhole of some kind and end up in the past in like this part of the country that we're talking about, right? And they are being chased by Native Americans who are firing arrows at Han Solo and Chewbacca. And Han Solo ends up getting killed in this particular kind of non-canon Star Wars story. It comes from a collection of Star Wars short comics called, I think, Star Wars Tales.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's right. And, of course, you know, Chewbacca mourns his friend with his famous yowl.
His plaintive wail
his
of
plaintive
sorrow.
His plaintive wail of sorrow, yeah. And kind of goes off into the wilderness alone. It's actually quite sad. And then the comic cuts to a couple hundred years in the future, and Indiana Jones shows up with his now fully grown sidekick, Short Round, from Temple of Doom, in search of Sasquatch. And it turns out that Chewbacca is Sasquatch. I just like that alternate reality kind of like treatment there.
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
Like DC's Elseworlds series or Marvel's, I can't remember what they call it in Marvel. Other Chewbacca facts, the character was inspired by George Lucas's dog, a big Alaskan Malamute, and...
Named Indiana.
Named
by the way.
Indiana. Yeah, yeah. We named the dog Indiana.
Exactly. No, and it wasn't the other way around. Indiana Jones was inspired by the dog, the name.
Yeah. And the name Chewbacca is derived from the Russian word for dog. So there's a very clear relationship there. And for anyone who's thinking about some of the chronology of that alternative world comic book, Noel summarized. Wookiees are very long-lived in comparison to humans. At the time Star Wars is set, Chewbacca is about 200 years old.
He looks great.
He looks fantastic. He must be using herbal essences or one of the fancy shampoos.
Or maybe Four Hymns.
Or maybe he's using Four Hymns.
Also keeps him virile. And he was quite virile because in the much maligned Star Wars holiday special, which I'm not even sure is considered canon. Lucas hated it so much. You are introduced to Chewbacca's family.
Right, yeah. You meet his. You meet three members of his family. His father, Itchy.
His wife, Mala.
Mm-hmm. And his son, I think this is your favorite one, Noel.
It's a Lumpy.
Lumpy.
Yeah.
These names are later... You're later told these are just nicknames.
They're nicknames, right. Yeah. They're much longer proper Wookiee names, and this is on his home planet of Kashyyyk.
Yeah. The dad is Atichitkuk.
Very well done.
It's probably terrible.
Hey, man.
We don't speak Wookiee.
We don't. It's fine, though. We do our best, our level best.
We do our level sincere best, whether it's hunting Bigfoot or protecting people from Bigfoot hunters, right? And we are off. We hope you enjoyed this episode at least as much as we enjoyed researching it.
You know what? I enjoyed this one very much.
Yeah, I'm glad to say there's never been one that I thought was a drag.
Yeah, no, seriously. But there's also a fun crossover between some of the stuff we talk about on our other show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, where we take a critical thinking approach to conspiracy theories like this one.
Yes, and stay tuned next week when we are going to do something completely different, exploring the bizarre story of Santa Anna and a funeral that he held.
Looking forward to that one, too.
We're having a hard time not telling you right now.
I know. We want to tease but not spoil.
Yeah, so please join us for our next episode. In the meantime, massive thanks to our guest super producer, Paul Deccant. Thanks, as always, to Casey Pegram. Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our opening music.
And a huge thanks to Christopher Hasiotis, who has been just doing amazing work, collaborating with us on research for these episodes.
So our episode falls to a close, but you don't have to say goodbye just yet. You can find us on our Facebook community page, Ridiculous Historians.
We are pushing it hard because it is a lot of fun. And the thing is about Facebook, as you know, if you have just like a regular Facebook page, the reach is you just don't know what you're going to get. If you might like the page, you might not see it. Most of the cool stuff that I look at on Facebook are like meme groups and Facebook pages like that. And that's how you know you're going to get the goods. And the folks on Ridiculous Historians are a lot of fun. There's a lot of fun history memes and just cool articles and discussion and, pictures of me and Ben doing weird stuff.
And of course, we have fantastic moderators there who really make the page what it is. We want you to be a part of it. There are some very interesting threads, and I hang out there. Noel hangs out there. We even cajoled our recurring arch nemesis, Jonathan Strickland, the Quizster, to post a picture of himself as a child.
At first, I saw it from a distance and thought it was a joke because I just saw like a giant weird clown. But when you zoom in, you see Jonathan's tiny, tiny child face in the hole.
It's one of those cutout things.
Yeah. So definitely do check that out.
And of course, you can always send an email with feedback or topic suggestions to us directly. We're ridiculous@howstuffworks.com, and we can't wait to hear from you.
And do us a solid, leave us a nice iTunes review. It really helps out and makes us feel good.
And we might read some on the air.
Yeah, maybe some bad ones even. Take it easy.